Welcome to episode 150 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for April 23rd, 2010. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, a road raging cyclist turns us into them. That New York City cop who body checked a cyclist is finally going to trial. Denver launches a bike sharing program, lots of product announcements and pro cycling news. Plus, 1 in 8 Dutch bikes are electric, hotel residents doing the same thing as Arizona prisoners, and a man blames Google Street View for his missing bicycle. Following the news, an initial review, an impression of the Dahan Speed Pro TT folding bike, and some upcoming cycling events. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike hammer, just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Great to have you here with us. Got a great show ready for you here, but I also want to sort of tease the next episode of the Fredcast next week, because I've got a business trip to Amsterdam this week, volcano gods willing, and I have scheduled, when I arrive on Sunday, the opportunity to interview Mark from AmsterdamEyes.com. And if you haven't had a chance to take a look at that, go to AmsterdamEyes.com and take a look, because it's going to be a great opportunity for me to immerse myself in Dutch cycling culture while I'm there, because I'm going to be bringing my Dahan Speed Pro TT. That's the folding bike that Dahan has sent to me for an extended test. I'm bringing it with me on the trip because, unlike most business trips that I go on, I am not renting a car. I'm going to be using my Dahan to get around. And what better place than in a place like Amsterdam, or even if I was going to Copenhagen. So Mark and I are going to meet up on Sunday. We're going to talk a little bit about Dutch cycling culture. He's going to show me a little bit around the city by bike, and then I'm going to be just another Dutch cyclist for the rest of the week as I go about my business during the week. I'm really looking forward to this experience and to the opportunity to spend some time and talk with Mark from AmsterdamEyes.com, and I will be bringing you some of that conversation on next week's episode of the Fredcast. So just a teaser for you as we get ready for this week's show. It's time for the news on this week's episode of the Fredcast. And before we get to that, I want to let you know that the news this week is sponsored by Keen Footwear. I want to let you know a little bit about our new sponsor. Keen started with a simple design challenge, namely, would it be possible to create a sandal that would also provide toe protection? And thus was born the ubiquitous Newport sandal, the Keen brand of footwear and a lifestyle now known by millions around the world as the hybrid life. Now, Keen has come on board as a sponsor, and we're so happy to have them, because you and I, well, we live the hybrid life. We work or go to school. We love to spend time with our families and friends, but we also have a love for the outdoors, and we want to experience the outdoors in many different ways. And that, in a nutshell, is the hybrid life that Keen talks about. Now, if you're not familiar with Keen yet, over the next few months, you will be. But for now, suffice it to say that Keen is it's a community of people like you and me, all of whom love their outdoors, their Keens, and their Keens give them kind of a portal to providing them with all sorts of unique outdoor experiences. Now, even if you are familiar with Keen, you may just think of them as a sandal company, but today, that couldn't be farther from the truth. As a matter of fact, I wore my Keens to work today, and I was dressed for business, and Keen is about everything from business to leisure and everything in between. Keen makes a huge, wide range of products for men, women, and kids that allow you to experience the great outdoors, whether it's in a national park or city park, the most remote jungles, or even the urban jungle, and all of them provide amazing comfort and fit from day one. For cyclists, Keen makes some fantastic shoes, socks, bags, and all sorts of other products, and I'm going to be talking more about those over the coming weeks. Guaranteed, I'll be talking about them when I'm in Amsterdam next week, because I'm going to be using my Keens to commute. In the meantime, head over to www.thefredcast.com, click on the banner ad for Keen, just to learn a little bit more about our new sponsor. Keen's company philosophy is create, play, care. If you've been a Fredcast listener for long, you know that this closely parallels what this show is all about. And we are so thankful to have Keen on board as a sponsor. I want to thank Keen for their support of the Fredcast, and I thank you for your support of Keen. Now let's get to the news. Topping the news this week is a story that comes to us from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, story of cyclist Dwayne Foster, 43 years old, a U.S. Marine and a long-distance cyclist who was found guilty last week of criminal threatening and was given a suspended 30-day jail sentence and a $500 fine with half suspended pending 2 years of good behavior for a September 9th, 2009 incident when a witness photographed him on the hood of a bright red Corvette holding a rock in his hand, seeming to be threatening the driver behind the wheel. Here's how the story goes. According to Foster's testimony, he and a group of about 20 cyclists were on a ride, a group ride, when all of a sudden they heard a car coming up quickly behind them. Now, according to Foster, the car swerved. It was a red Corvette. It swerved around the cyclists and caused them to fan out around the road. The driver, according to Foster, applied his brakes, quote, hard enough for the anti-skid to cycle. Then he yelled and displayed his middle finger. According to Foster's testimony, quote, he was a danger to people on the road. I knew what I had to do. He needed to be educated about safety. Now, up until that statement, there's no doubt that if this is what happened, and there were plenty of other cyclists who testified that Foster's account up until this point was accurate, the driver was doing what many of us have seen before. Very similar, reminds me a lot of that case down in Australia that we've talked about here on the show before, where the driver pulled up in front of the cyclist and slammed on his brakes, similar to the one that we talked about in Topanga Canyon in Los Angeles, where the driver pulled up in front of the cyclist and slammed on his brakes. Fairly common road raging motorist versus cyclist kind of a situation. The problem is, what happened next? Remember, Foster said he knew what he had to do. He needed to educate that driver about safety. So, taking a shortcut, Foster found a way to get up in front of the driver. He laid his bike down in the road, forcing the driver to stop. He had a rock in his hand. The driver kept nudging forward, according to Foster, at which point he was eventually touching Foster's shins. Foster jumped up onto the hood and menaced the driver with the rock, at the same time turning the car ignition off and trying to grab the keys. Eventually, some non-cyclists stopped, called the police. The police showed up. They gave the driver of the Corvette, Richard McIntosh, who was 67 years old, a field sobriety test, and they charged him with a count of reckless operation. We've all had to deal with road raging motorists before. We've all had to deal with motorists who have acted recklessly and dangerously around us as cyclists before. In this case, however, the motorist didn't injure any of the cyclists. The motorist was simply a jerk. And it would have been very simple to get the motorist's license number. You had enough witnesses and then call that in to the police. I can already hear some of you saying, oh, we've done that before. The police have done nothing. But that doesn't make it right for you as cyclists to stoop to the same level as the motorist. It doesn't make it right for you to engage in vigilante justice. It's simply a matter of us becoming them in a situation like this. I talk all the time here on the Fredcast and on The Spokesman. And when I meet you folks in person, I talk all the time about being good cycling citizens. In this case, Foster was not a good cycling citizen. He was just a guy who was angry and who did the wrong thing at the end of the day. What was interesting was that he was quoted in the article, one of the articles that I read, that when he was walking out of the courtroom, there was a group of youngsters that were in the court observing. I mean, you all did that in school, right? You went to the local courthouse and you observed some trials going on. This is what he was quoted as saying, quote, I was a Marine who flew tankers. You think being on the hood of a car is cool? It's not cool. I could have lost my career. What was he concerned about here? Was he concerned about losing his career? Or was he concerned that now that the passion was gone, now that the heat of the moment was over, was he concerned that he did the wrong thing? And reading through his quotes, I'm not so sure. And I'll tell you what, if Dwayne Foster is out there, or if anybody knows Dwayne Foster, I'd love to talk to him. I'd love to have him here on the Fredcast. I'd love to have him on the Spokesman to get his perspective on what happened. From what I'm reading, I think he did the wrong thing. But I'd love to hear his perspective, and I'd also love to hear yours. Another topic we talk about here on the Fredcast all the time is the controversy about whether or not it's okay to listen to an iPod or MP3 player or virtually anything that's stuck in your ears while you're riding a bike. Well, a 55-year-old woman in New Zealand was killed last week when she was struck by a train at a rail intersection while riding her bicycle. Now, the person driving the train did see the woman approaching the tracks and did try to stop the train, but as Rail and Maritime Transport Union General Secretary Wayne Butson said, once the driver hits the brakes, quote, he is an unwilling spectator in this. Once he's thrown on the brakes and hung on the horn, there's not much else he can do. And as a result, the union is now trying to raise awareness that MP3 players and car stereos are distractions that can lead to tragedies such as this, especially considering the fact that this particular accident, not too far away from another very similar accident that occurred back in November when another individual wearing an iPod or MP3 player was struck and killed by a train. Lesson here is clear. If you're going to block your ears, you're going to be blocking out one of your most important senses when you're riding your bike. And that means that either you should remove one of your earbuds, as is legal in many states in the United States, or not wear them at all, or consider one of these devices that removes the earbuds from your ears entirely and either goes through the bones in your head or you use an external speaker if you've got to listen to something. I want you listening to the Fredcast, but I also want you around for a very long time. Hey, do you remember that critical mass incident in New York's Times Square that occurred July of 2008? It was famous because it was on YouTube and all over the internet, whether it was on cycling sites or general interest sites, that seemed to portray an NYPD cop body checking a cyclist off of his bike. That officer, Patrick Pogan, now 24 years old, was making his first arrest that July 25th when he knocked cyclist Christopher Long off of his bike in Times Square. That officer, you may recall, was charged with falsifying documents and assault, among other crimes, in the incident. And now that case is at trial. And there have been barbs flying back and forth between the prosecution and the defense portraying the cyclist as an anti-establishment, anti-authority, pot-smoking hippie who also, coincidentally, it came out in court, once hit a pedestrian with his own car when he was driving, killing that pedestrian. And this was about 10 years ago when Mr. Long lived in North Carolina. Since then, Long has stopped being a motorist and become strictly a bicyclist. In my mind, however, what's the difference whether or not Long was an axe murderer or was Mother Teresa? The question comes down to, was Pogan justified in body checking Long off of his bicycle? And certainly, why was he falsifying documents about the incident? Pogan recently took the stand in his own defense, saying that he was under orders to stop, quote, out of control, unquote, critical mass riders and to issue them citations if they were riding out of control. According to Pogan, Long was moving too quickly, and he couldn't be stopped in any other way than by using force. He went on to say, quote, it was a split-second decision. I couldn't use mace. Time was not an option. I used force that I felt was necessary to effect an arrest. The trial will continue this coming Monday when Pogan, who's now working in construction since he resigned from the New York Police Department, is scheduled to take the stand and be cross-examined on Monday. At the end of the trial, he will face assault, harassment, and felony charges for those falsifications of the documents, which he claims were written by his sergeant in order to expedite their completion. I guarantee that I will have an update on this story on next week's episode of the Fredcast. Yesterday, as you may know, was Earth Day around the world, April the 22nd, as it is every year and has been for a number of decades now. And it was the perfect day, at least on the calendar, to launch the nation's first large-scale citywide bicycle sharing program, a la Paris and so many of those other places that we have talked about. This new program was launched in Denver, Colorado yesterday, and it is called Denver B-Cycle. Now, the reason I say that yesterday looked like it was a good day was because yesterday was an awful day for weather in Denver, including thunderstorms, heavy rain, strong gusty winds, and even some tornado warnings. So yesterday may not have been the best day in the world to be on a bike, but it was a great day, a momentous day in the state of Colorado and the city of Denver. Now, by the end of June, Denver will have approximately 500 B-cycles. Those are the bicycle sharing bikes that are available at about 50 B stations around the city. Users can sign up for 7-day passes for $20, 30-day passes for $30, or annual memberships for $65 online. And I put a link to the website in this week's show notes. Also, you can purchase a $5 24-hour membership at each B-Cycle station just by using a major credit card. Plus, discounts are available for students and seniors, and once you're registered as a user or a member in the system, there's no charge for the first 30 minutes every time you check out a B-cycle from a B station. After 30 minutes, additional usage fees will apply that escalate every half hour thereafter, and the fee caps at $65 per day, which sounds a bit steep to me if you consider that if you wanted to rent a car, you could probably rent one for less than that. Now, B-Cycle itself is a partnership between Humana Incorporated, Trek Bike Corporation, and Crispin Porter and Boguski. The founding partners, quote, share a belief that bicycles should be a vehicle for positive health and environmental change and an important part of communities' transportation ecosystem. I think this is a great program. I think Denver is a great place to start this. Denver is a hub in the United States for sort of the green movement and has a really thriving downtown environment. So I think that this is something that really could catch on in that city and hopefully catch fire elsewhere across the United States. I'm looking forward to traveling to Denver at some point in the future and being able to try out B-Cycle. And if I do, I will let you know right here on the show. Of course, when I do go to Denver, one of the things that I'm going to be really interested in is a good bike map so that I know how to get around. And it was announced earlier this week that the Denver bike map that used to be sold for $5 each is now available for free. The 2010 edition shows cyclists the best ways to get around the city and has updated information on bike lanes, shared routes, and multi-use trails. It's now available for free. I've put a link in the show notes to where you can get more information, and that will also show you where you can pick these maps up if you live in Denver or you are visiting and just want to try out one of those new B-cycles. Finally, good news for those of you who are worried about Colorado's Governor Ritter. Governor Ritter is getting back on his bike after that March accident, which I told you about here on the Fredcast, where he broke 6 ribs. Governor Ritter actually took part in a 50-mile charity bike ride on Sunday in Castle Rock, and there were more than 1,000 cyclists on hand to help Governor Ritter get back on the bike. Last weekend was the annual Sea Otter Classic held in Monterey, California. And while we weren't able to attend this year, we were well represented. Martha Van Inwegen from Action Wipes fame, her husband Kurt, represented everyone on Team Fredcast. Go to thefredcast.com and check out Kurt's video of his race. It's quite humorous. I think you'll enjoy it. Kurt, thanks so much for representing us fellow Freds at this year's Sea Otter. But of most interest to most of you is the fact that Sea Otter, much like Interbike, marks a time in the year when a lot of bike manufacturers and bike component manufacturers announce new products. And this year, SRAM was at the head of those announcements. And it seems like what got the most attention is their new Apex entry-level aluminum road group set. The really cool thing is that this road group set from SRAM is coming in at an aftermarket price of just $799. And I think that you may see street prices lower than that. And this is a great way to get yourself on some SRAM components. It includes a 5034 double compact chainring and SRAM's new PG1050 1132 rear cassette with a wider range of gears for both hill climbing, descending, and cruising, and at least according to the reports, it's faster and lighter than a lot of popular triple groups. And since you've got the compact, you should be able to have some great climbing gears there. For those of you who have been really drooling over a lot of the great features in SRAM's Red Group, you're going to find a lot of those great features in this group as well. It includes double tap, reach adjust, and zero loss shifting. If you've ever ridden a SRAM group, then you know how innovative these technologies are. And to get that for $799, I think that that's a pretty great price for a full group from SRAM. Another product that was recently announced is one that comes from AAMI, the venerable bicycle handlebar grip company that's been around for quite some time. And my guess is that the designer had this idea after finishing a cold bike ride when his or her hands were really freezing, and then getting in their car that may have been equipped with a heated steering wheel, because AAMI has come out with heated handlebar grips. According to the company, the grips feature microprocess technology and internal sensors that give the rider the freedom to easily adjust each grip to any of six temperature settings with a simple push of a button. This allows for comfortable hand temperatures that reduce fatigue and maintain finger dexterity, all of which improves rider control. The grips retail for $129.95. But the battery pack and the charger are sold separately. I don't have pricing on that yet. I'm curious about that. They include weatherproof connectors, simple push-button six-setting temperature adjustment with LED lights, a six-month grip replacement on manufacturer defect, and a two-year half-price replacement warranty on grips for damage due to fall or excessive wear. I'm going to see if I can get a pair of these grips to try out and let you know whether or not they really live up to the expectation. But if they do, I think these would be a great addition to any mountain bike setup. Here's a follow-up to a story that we did on last week's show. You remember we were talking about Rahsaan Bahati racing at the 2010 Dana Point Grand Prix. And we mentioned a crash that occurred and Bahati's statement that United Healthcare Pro Cycling intentionally crashed him. And there was some dispute about that, and it wasn't readily apparent from the video that was available at the time. A new video has surfaced, and I've put a link in the show notes. It seems very clear looking at this video. If you look at 1 minute 22 seconds into the video, it looks like Jake Keough from United Healthcare Pro Cycling did indeed intentionally swerve into and, going back to body checking, almost body check Bahati. It looks like United Healthcare was upset with Bahati trying to join their train and intentionally either tried to give him a warning or crash him out of this event. Looking at this video makes it very clear that that's what happened, and I'm also very curious to see what commissioners and commissaires do to sanction United Healthcare Pro Cycling and or Jake Keough. Now, still having said this, it doesn't make what Bahati did at the end of the race by throwing something into the peloton, intentionally into the wheels of someone in the race. But it seems to me that Jake Keough intentionally crashed him looking at this video. Take a look. Let me know what you think. Well, let's briefly get caught up on the professional cycling news since we last met here on episode 149 of the Fredcast, starting with the Vuelta Castilla y León, April 14th through the 18th in Spain. This race being won by, Well, a name we've never heard before, Alberto Contador of Spain, becoming the first racer to win 3 Vuelta de Castilla y León titles. He finished in the pack in the race's 5th and final stage. That 106.6-mile long leg won by Sergio Ribeiro from Portugal in 3 hours, 50 minutes, and 6 seconds. At the end of the Vuelta Castilla y León, the general classification showed Alberto Contador from Spain and Team Astana at the top in 16 hours, 56 minutes, and 1 second. Second place going to Igor Anton from Spain and Euskaltel Euskadi, 41 seconds back of Contador. Third going to Ezequiel Mosquera, also from Spain, and the Jacobeo Galicia team, 1 minute 20 seconds back of the leader Contador. Fourth going to Janic Brockovic from Slovenia and Team Radio Shack, 1.5 minutes behind Contador. And fifth place, 2 minutes 30 seconds back, going to David Bernabeu from Spain and Team Barbeau. Last weekend saw the running of the venerable Amstel Gold Race in the Netherlands, this race being won by Philippe Gilbert of Belgium after he powered up the Kouberg climb, that final very well-known climb, to win the race in 6 hours, 22 minutes, and 54 seconds, 2 seconds ahead of Canada's Ryder Hegdahl, and also 2 seconds ahead of Team Astana's Enrico Gasparotto. Fourth place going to Bert de Vaelle from Belgium, 5 seconds back. Fifth place in the same time, Roman Kreuziger from Team Liquigas. Damiano Cuniego was also finishing in the same time as Kreuziger. Seventh place going to Team Saxo Bank's Frank Schleck, 7 seconds back. Eighth going to Marco Mercato from Italy, 9 seconds back. Ninth place was Karsten Kroon from Team BMC, 11 seconds behind Gilbert. And 10th place going to Chris Horner from the United States and Team Radio Shack in the same time as Karsten Kroon. Interestingly, however, while this is one of the most famous and most popular races of the early classic season every spring, this race was missed by a number of famous professional cyclists from around the world who were kept from being able to get to the Netherlands last weekend by that volcano in Iceland. Included in that, Alejandro Valverde, Carlos Sastre, and Bradley Wiggins. Now, coming up this weekend, this Sunday, is the famous Liège-Bastogne-Liège race in Belgium. And typically, one of the preludes to that event is last weekend's Flèche Wallonne, or the Walloon Arrow, that took place in Belgium as well. This year's race being won by world champion BMC Racing's Cadel Evans. Evans is definitely trying to make his mark on the early racing scene to let everybody know that he is in contention for the Grand Tours later in the year, specifically the Tour de France. Like Amstel Gold with its famous Kouberg climb, the Flèche Wallonne is known for its famous Mur de Huy, or the Wall of Huy, Huy being the final city in which the Flèche Wallonne finishes every single year. And that was where this year's race was also decided. Initially, Contador, Alberto Contador, jumped out to an early attack on the Mur de Huy, but Evans eventually made up the difference in the last 100 meters of the race with a very strong finish, finishing in 4 hours, 39 minutes, and 24 seconds. When the final results were in, it was Cadel Evans in first place after 198 kilometers, second place going to Joaquin Rodriguez from Team Katusha, Alberto Contador coming in third, fourth place going to Igor Anton from Team Euskaltel Euskadi, and fifth place going to Damiano Cuniego from Team Lamprey, just 9 seconds back of world champion Cadel Evans. As a result of last week's racing, there are some changes in the top 5 in this week's world rankings. Luis Leon Sanchez is still in first place, and Tom Bonin from Belgium is still in second. Philippe Gilbert moves from 6th to 3rd place. Joaquin Rodriguez moves from 3rd down to 4th, and Alejandro Valverde moves from 4th down to 5th place. There's still plenty of racing left in this year's 2010 racing season, but we'll keep you updated every week on those standings. Coming up next, the major events, well, one that I've already mentioned, this Sunday, April 25th, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, and then April 27th through May the 2nd, it's time for the Tour de Romandie in Switzerland. And well, I suppose it wouldn't be a Fredcast unless we had another doping scandal in professional cycling. This week's doping scandals du jour, how do you say week in French? Anyway, the doping scandals this week in the world of professional cycling. First of all, another BMC cyclist has been suspended for doping. This makes three in as many weeks. Thomas Frey, a 24-year-old Swiss cyclist riding for BMC, tested positive, at least his A sample did, for the endurance-boosting drug EPO, and the results of the B sample have not yet been announced. According to Jim Okowitz, the team manager and co-owner for Team BMC, quote, Frey will now have to personally address the accusation. This now being the third of the BMC cyclists having been suspended due to doping, really makes one wonder about the future of this team. And remember, this team includes Cadel Evans and George Hincapie. But the reason why it makes people wonder is because Andy Rees, who is also a co-owner of Team BMC, he was one of the owners of the Phonak team, which you may recall also crumbled years ago when it had its own doping scandals, including by one American cyclist, Floyd Landis. Meanwhile, it seems Lance Armstrong's team Radio Shack is also not immune to its own doping issues. Chinese rider Li Fuyu tested positive for clenbuterol. Now, clenbuterol, I looked it up, is a, quote, anabolic agent that can be used to reduce body fat. And he tested positive for this during an in-competition test on March 23rd. This suspension also coming after the testing of an A sample, and I'm sure the rider will request a B sample test. And Fuyu has been suspended pending the Chinese Cycling Federation's final determination as to whether or not the rider was indeed doping. According to a statement from Team Radio Shack, quote, if that test is positive, the rider will be removed from the team. Team Radio Shack and its management take this incident very seriously. We will respect the rights of our rider, but will enforce our zero-tolerance policy should his B sample test positive. Now, for those of you who think Li Fuyu's name sounds familiar, that's because he is the first professional Chinese cyclist to join a Pro Tour team, that taking place 3 years ago in 2007. Now, maybe I've got Amsterdam on my mind, or maybe it's just because I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to get used to riding a bike around a city without wearing a helmet, because it seems nobody in Amsterdam wears a helmet. But I found this story and I thought it was interesting. You know, a lot of us talk about places like Copenhagen and Amsterdam as models for what major world cities could be if more people adopted cycling as their mode of, or their primary mode of transportation as they go about their commuting to work or their doing errands or what have you. And what's interesting is a new study now shows that 1 in 8 bicycles in the Netherlands is actually an electric bicycle. Between 2006 and 2009, the e-bike market quadrupled from 40,000 units to over 150,000 last year. According to Bike Europe, the popularity of e-bikes come at the expense, obviously, of the city bike category. And that's pretty much what you see mostly in Amsterdam, or city bikes. And there's even some cargo bikes as well. City bikes saw a decline in sales of 6% last year. Despite that, as I said, this segment still remains the largest in the Netherlands, with a market share of 49% or 628,000 units sold last year. Hybrids and trekking bikes make up about 16% or 205,000 units sold last year. Meanwhile, children's bikes declined 6% last year to a total of 172,000 units. It doesn't say in this article how many folding bikes were sold in the Netherlands last year. I'll do a little survey while I'm there. And not to be outdone, here's a story about Copenhagen. Last week, you may recall that I told you the story of Arizona Sheriff Joe Arpaio and his making some of his inmates in his Maricopa County jail ride bicycles to generate electricity so that then they could watch whatever shows they wanted to on television. Well, the Crown Plaza Hotel in Copenhagen is now offering its guests the opportunity to jump on an exercise bike to generate electricity for the hotel, and in exchange, they can earn free meal vouchers. I wonder which came first, Crown Plaza in Copenhagen or the Maricopa County Jail. Now, the hotel developed its program to help reduce its carbon footprint and to promote, quote, unique fitness activities for its guests. Following a short 15-minute ride, guests receive a $36 meal voucher in exchange for their labor. That's pretty good. I'd definitely do that. Each bike is hooked up to hotel generators with iPhones attached to each handlebar to show the amount of power being produced. Each 15-minute ride generates about 10 watt hours of electricity. I need to get one of these for my house. Earlier in the show, we talked about how professional cyclists were prevented from being able to attend the Amstel Gold Race in the Netherlands as a result of that Icelandic volcano whose name I am not even going to attempt to pronounce, and the volcanic ash that was in the air over Europe, causing all of Europe to shut down its airline industry. Well, obviously, professional cyclists were not the only ones who were stranded. The BBC tells the story of a London businessman who was stranded in France, wanted desperately to get home. He knew that if he could get himself to Dunkirk, he could likely find a spot on a ferry going across the English Channel headed back to England. However, when he got there, he was told that there were no more tickets available for the ferries for pedestrian riders, but that they did have tickets available for cyclists. The man looked around, didn't have a bicycle. He found a local store and bought himself a woman's bicycle. He bought it at a secondhand shop, picked it up, rode it back over to the ferry. They sold him a ticket for a cyclist, and onto the ferry he went. According to the man, whose name is Tom Noble, and he's 52 from Highgate, about half a dozen other people either watched him or had the exact same idea and boarded the boat, according to the BBC, quote, in a wobbling parade of two-wheelers. One man, according to the article, a British Airways Gold Card member, in other words, a frequent flyer, kind of like George Clooney in Up in the Air, or maybe even me sometimes, he had to ride aboard the ferry on a children's bike. That's how silly it was that he actually had to have a bicycle with him in order to get this ticket. Once the ferry got to Dover, back on the English side of the channel, all of the riders, sadly, were forced to dump their bicycles because they weren't able to take them on the parade of buses, taxis, and motor cars that were getting them to their destination. But this story does go to prove, when stranded, find yourself a bicycle. And finally tonight, for those of you who are concerned about the safety of your bicycles, comes a story from The Telegraph in England. And Gordon Rayner from the UK would probably recommend that if you ever see the Google Street View van coming by your house, close your garage so they can't see your bicycle. According to The Telegraph, Mr. Rayner said last week that his mountain bike was stolen because of Google Street View. After the robbery, Mr. Rayner was alerted to a photograph provided by Google service, which shows him standing next to his house in front of an open garage door. Inside the garage, you can clearly see his washing machine and a mountain bike that he no longer owns. Quote, when you look at the photograph, my face is blacked out. The windows of my house are blacked out. But because the garage door was left open, you can clearly see everything in there. I would argue that they should have blacked that out. It's just an invitation for any criminal to take what they like. A Google spokesperson said that Street View is now in 20 countries without any known increase in crime as a result. Apparently, images of people and houses are rubbed out by request only. Quote, the imagery on Street View is no different to what anyone could readily capture or see by traveling down the street themselves. Our sympathies to Mr. Rayner and the loss of his mountain bike, but for the rest of you, take a lesson. Well, that's going to do it for this week's news segment sponsored by Keen Footwear. Don't forget to go to www.thefredcast.com and check out Keen Footwear. I'm wearing mine right now. I love them. I guarantee you will too. Go ahead and check it out. More on Keen on the next episode of The Fredcast. We thank them so much for their support. Well, this week's features segment is sponsored by Jensen USA. Our friends at Jensen USA are in the midst of a bicycle overstock sale. Their overstock is your gain, and you can save 30% or more on bikes from Look, Rocky Mountain, SE, Intense, and Scott, and more just by going to Jensen USA. And you know, we've been having this contest going on here on the Fredcast for your best customer service stories. We've gotten all of your submissions, sent them over to Jensen. Next week's episode of the Fredcast, we're going to announce who's going to win that great free handlebar, and we'll let you know about their wonderful customer service stories. They're great, and we'll share at least one or two of them with you on next week's show. In the meantime, go to www.thefredcast.com and click the Jensen USA banner, or go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast. If you've never used Jensen USA before, you're going to find great prices and great customer service, and I know you will return. We thank Jensen USA for their support and for sponsoring this week's features segment, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. All right, so I keep talking about my trip to Amsterdam coming up because I'm really excited. I've been to Amsterdam before. It's a wonderful city, great museums, amazing food. Someone once told me that when you're in Amsterdam, you can eat in every corner of the world just by walking to another block, and it's really true. I'm going there for business, but I'm going to have the opportunity on Sunday to spend some time with Mark from AmsterdamEyes.com, and we're going to go on a bike ride, and I'm going to do that. And I'm going to commute around the city for business on my Dahan Speed Pro TT folding bike. And I thought I'd tell you a little bit about it before I get out there and use it and tell you about my experiences of traveling with this bike. You know, I travel a ton. And one of the biggest challenges to somebody who travels as much as I do is to stay in shape, especially to stay in cycling shape. I don't find that most cycle or fitness cycles that are in hotel gyms are really that great, at least from my perspective. I'd much rather get out on the road on a bicycle, but traveling with a full mountain bike or a full road bike is just too difficult. And as we've noted on some previous episodes of the Fredcast, too expensive. So I talked to the folks at Dahan and I said, what do you recommend for a serious road cyclist who wants to stay in shape when they're out there on the road, but wants a folding bike so that hopefully they don't incur those high airline fees? And they recommended the Dahan Speed Pro TT. Now, this bike is definitely not your average looking road bike. It's got little 20-inch wheels and it's got that sort of traditional folding bike look, but that is where the comparison to a traditional folding bike ends. And I got to be honest, I've always been a little bit skeptical of folding bikes and whether or not they're for quote unquote real cyclists or whether they're just for those who have airplanes or RVs or boats or who commute back and forth on trains and buses and need something that folds up into a compact size. Because a lot of the folding bikes that many of us are used to are bulky and heavy, and you just can't think of yourself training on one. But the folks at Dahan said, David, try the Speed Pro TT. This is made for serious cyclists. It's got 27 speeds. And let me tell you how that works, because it's really interesting, because it's got an Altegra rear derailleur, and it's got Shimano dual control shifters, and it's got a 9-speed rear cassette. But what it doesn't have is chain rings on the front. And the way that it does that is with a very unique rear hub from SRAM called the Dual Drive, coupled with the Shimano front shifter. What it ends up doing is it's got internal gearing in the hub that gives you the equivalent of three chain rings, of a triple chain ring on the front, even though you really only have one chain ring on the front. I was a bit skeptical of it at first, and quite frankly, it was, when I first got it, a little confusing to me about how to use it, and I didn't find the included SRAM owner's manual that helpful. However, I did find a very useful SRAM YouTube video that explained everything to me about how to install it and how to use it. It's quite simple, by the way. I felt like an idiot. It's quite easy to use. You install it, you adjust it, and you are off and running. Now, I went for a ride on the bike, and my initial impression was, after the lifting it up and finding this is really quite light, and I looked up the specs on that, without pedals, the bike weighs 9.7 kilos. That's 21.4 pounds. Pretty respectable for a bike that folds up as compact as it does. And so when I took it for a ride, I noticed that I felt that it was light. It was comfortable, very adjustable, easy to adjust seat post, easy to adjust stem. And I found that it was really a great bike to ride. I took it out here in Park City, up and down hills and down roads that I go on my Colnago all the time. I found it was really comfortable. The only adjustment that I had to make was that I found that because it has 20-inch wheels, the steering is just a little bit twitchier than I'm used to on 700C or 26 or 29-inch wheels. But that really didn't take that long. Once I had the opportunity to ride a little bit and get used to the steering and just knowing that turning the handlebars was going to cause a much faster reaction of the bike, that was it. That was all the adjustment that it took. It climbed quite well. It descended very stably on flats. I could get it up to speed and keep it up to speed at a reasonable speed and feel like I was getting a good workout and really having a very good road bike style feeling, even though I was riding a 20-inch folding bike. Components on the bike come from some of the best-known names in the industry: FSA cranks, Core seat posts and saddle, Syntace handlebar system. It's a really unique Syntace system made for folding bikes. American Classic front hub, Sapim rims, specially designed Schwalbe tires. This is a really nice bike. There are no compromises when it comes to the Dahan Speed Pro TT. It retails for about $1,499. I've put links in the show notes, and yes, I will continue to bring you reports as I put more and more miles on it, both in the air and on the road, to let you know whether or not my feeling about the bike has changed and also how the bike is holding up over time. In addition to the Speed Pro TT, Dahan also sent me their $389 retail Air Porter case, which is a semi-hard-sided case into which I can put the Speed Pro, I've put my shoes, my helmet, a pump, a couple of other tools so that I'm ready to go when I arrive at my destination. It's got a couple of very hefty straps that go around it, couple of really good handles, and it also includes caster wheels so that I can roll it through an airport or to a rental car, to a hotel, or wherever I'm going. The bag itself weighs just 21 pounds, considering the fact that the bike weighs just over 21 pounds. Unless I put too much stuff in there, I should be below most airlines' 50-pound limit for baggage. Here, however, is the hitch. The hitch is that the linear dimensions of the bag, in other words, if you take length plus width plus depth, the linear dimensions of the bag is 73¼ inches. My airline of choice, Delta, has a limit, just like a lot of other airlines, of 62 linear inches. I'm going to be traveling with the bike tomorrow. I don't expect that I'm going to be charged. A couple of reasons. One, yeah, I am a premium flyer on Delta. Two, a lot of people have said that if you let them know, a lot of times they won't ask what's in a case this size. The other thing is, a little white lie, tell them it's for a trade show or that it's business related, and typically they won't charge you. I'm going to see what happens. Dahan, on their website, they have put the following caveat. The airporter suitcase has a measurement of 73 linear inches. However, the airlines have a set limit of 62 linear inches. This may mean that you'll be charged an oversized luggage fee. We've traveled extensively with the airporter suitcase and fortunately, as yet, have not been charged for having oversized luggage. It largely depends on which airline you use and how strictly they enforce the baggage size rules. Another factor that may play a part depends on which routes you fly. If you're flying to some popular tourist destinations, security may be heightened and more attention will be paid to the size of your luggage. In my case, I'm getting on an international flight to a destination that's been closed for about a week. And whether or not they're therefore being a little bit more stringent about their baggage rules may affect whether they decide to charge me. I'll give you an update on the next episode from Amsterdam and let you know whether or not I was charged, but hopefully I won't be. More on the Dahan SpeedPro TT as time goes on, and more on my travels with it. Okay, and it's time to get back to something that we did on the Fredcast from the first couple of years, and I think I've gotten away from, and I really want to get back to it, because to me, what makes cycling great are some of the great cycling events around the country, indeed, around the world. And so I want to give you four upcoming cycling events that you can participate in. Some of them are for some great causes, but all of them will be great for you and great experiences. The first one is right here in Utah. It takes place in Ogden, Utah. It's the Tour de Drome. It is a benefit bike tour on May the 1st. It'll start at Ogden's Pioneer Heritage Rodeo Grounds. This one's giving back to cycling because the proceeds are going to go toward putting together Ogden's future bicycle velodrome. This will be part of a new multi-sports field house complex in Ogden. And Ogden's really becoming a center of sports-related companies. So I think that this is fantastic. You'll be able to choose from routes that go from 28 miles all the way up to a century of 104 miles. And there will also be a fun ride for children of all ages. And yes, I have put links in the show notes to this and all of the events I am about to tell you about. The next one takes place across the country in Rome, Georgia. This one, gotta love the name. It is Up the Creek Without a Pedal. It takes place in Rome, Georgia, which is in Northwest Georgia. And you are going to have the opportunity to ride 30, 45, 62, and 100 mile options. Again, this takes place May the 8th, 2010 in Rome, Georgia. And then I've got two events for you on May the 15th, depending on whether you're on the East Coast or the West Coast and whether you are up to a double century. The first one is the American Cancer Society's Shorebird Metric Century. You can do a 15, a 35, or a 65 mile metric century. This takes place May the 15th, 2010 in Salisbury, Maryland, and proceeds go to support the American Cancer Society. Definitely a very important cause. And finally, also on May 15th, you had to have been training for this one because it's a toughie and probably one of the nation's most well-known double centuries. It's time for the 2010 Davis Double Century. This is the 41st running of the Davis Double Century. Again, taking place May 15th, 2010 in Davis, California, a beautiful place to ride a bicycle and probably a great place for a double century. Links to all four of these events are in the show notes at www.thefredcast.com. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Fredcast. Before we get out of here, I've got to thank our sponsors, Keen Footwear, for sponsoring the news segment of this week's show. Go to www.thefredcast.com and click the Keen banner to learn more about Keen, and we'll be talking more about them on shows to come. We thank them for their support of the show. Also, the show is sponsored this week by Jensen USA. Go to JensenUSA.com/TheFredcast to check out all the great deals and experience the amazing customer service that you can get from Jensen USA. And of course, the Fredcast is always sponsored by listeners like you. Click that Donate Now link at the top of TheFredcast.com on the right-hand side of the page to show your support for the Fredcast. We thank all of our sponsors and you for their and your support of the Fredcast. Remember, for show notes and links and lots of other information, go to www.thefredcast.com and follow us also on Twitter, twitter.com/Fredcast, or on Facebook, facebook.com/Fredcast. For audio comments, call our Fredcast listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. Anytime, day or night. Well, it's time for that part of the show that a lot of you really enjoy. It's time for PodSafe Cycling Music. And this week's PodSafe Cycling Music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by the Cadence Revolution, your weekly podcast of PodSafe music that's perfect for your indoor cycling, available at www.cadencerevolution.com. And by the way, Cadence Revolution, yes, there's an app for that in the iTunes store, and I've got 10 promo codes for free Cadence Revolution iPhone apps. The first 10 Fredcast listeners who email me requesting will get sent a free promo code for the Cadence Revolution app. I love the Cadence Revolution. I listen to it every week. You will too. This week, the Cadence Revolution has chosen Fan of the Bean by the Clintons as our PodSafe cycling music. So before we play that for you, I want to thank Cadence Revolution for providing the music, and thank you for listening to the Fredcast, for staying subscribed, and for telling all of your friends. We couldn't do the Fredcast without you. This is David, your host and Chief Fred, saying thanks for listening. Between this show and the next, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.
Simply said, I woke up today, needed in my system that surprise and pain. Tell you about a blondie who was really hot. I tell you how she broke me, but I'd rather not. Instead, I'll tell you about my trip to Vegas, hanging out on the strip. I tried my hand at poker, but I lost my grip. I had a few too many, now my brain's gone soft. Maybe fear and loving wasn't too far off. It's got a stranglehold on me. It's got a stranglehold on me. While I think it's obscene, I'm addicted to caffeine. It's a damn not a fan of the bean. I think it's obscene, I'm addicted to caffeine. It's a damn not a fan of the bean. Why this sense of urgency? Day can't keep going without it. It's a love, hate, hate, love, love, hate thing. So I bust off the whooping stick and step outside. A mustard full of ladies goes cruising by. Stereo's pumping up the B&L mix, but I can't chase them till I get my fix. It's got a stranglehold on me. It's got a stranglehold on me. I'm addicted to caffeine, it's a damn not a fan of the bean. I think it's obscene, I'm addicted to caffeine, it's a damn not a fan of the bean. It's got a stranglehold on me. 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 I'm addicted to caffeine, it's a damn not a fan of the bean. I think it's obscene, I'm addicted to caffeine, it's a damn not a fan of the bean. Woo!